Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. We're coming out a very beautiful morning here in Honolulu. It is trades are up. It's fantastic, and it's a great morning, I'm sure, on the West Coast as well. Rob, and we have Rob Greenley, co-host. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing great, Todd. Fantastic. Well, it's kind of cloudy and threatening rain here, and I'm sure Chris will also see that as well, since he's in the Seattle area as well.
I think it threatens rain all the time. good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well with the Apple TV there.
Yeah, you like that.
Yeah. And it's pretty sexy.
And I'm all thumbs this morning on the switcher. So, of course, we got Chris, the venerable Chris Perillo on top. Good morning.
Are we the only ones awake at this time? Hang on. There's one person in the chat room here, MG Dell. Thank you for being awake.
He's on the East Coast, so yeah.
Easy for him.
But so I guess what we, you know, when Rob and I have been on this grand adventure to bring in luminaries in the space, and Chris,
what are you doing with me then?
You've been in the space as longer than most people, and if anyone's kept a brand alive, you have, and you built a brand around yourself, of course.
You almost sound like I've got kicking and screaming. I'm just dragging it in the mud now. You know,
no, it's a good
come on, brand.
It's a good thing.
My dog takes offense. He's like, what is this? I don't know what's going on. What brand?
I saw I saw a recent video you did, and I saw your dog. What breed is he?
It's a Lhasa Apso Shih Tzu Poodle.
Oh my goodness. That's a mouthful.
I'd say.
Sounds like a mutt, right? Yeah.
He looks like he or she is a lot of fun. So
yes.
That's cool. So, Rob, it's been a fun week here. You've been busy getting stuff organized on the show. We've got some guests coming up here in the near future. Who do you have locked in for us in the coming weeks that are tentatively scheduled right now?
I've got Michael Wolff, who did the podcast project and wrote the big article in Forbes about podcasting. He's going to be on next week. Paul Colligan, who wrote the YouTube book, he's going to be on. Rob Walsh from Libsyn. Tim Street, who's a longtime podcaster and content producer out of LA. And on the 25th of May, I have a fellow from the FCC to come in to talk about closed captioning on web video. So, there's a bunch of folks I'm actually booked up through almost the end of June. So,
well, that's fantastic. I've got saw Tim at NAB, and of course Tim's wearing a couple of hats right now, and yep. So it's cool to see that you got him on board. And Tim's got I think Tim's kind of what we would call has moved on to a new phase in life, but he's doing some cool things in the space he's in. But yep. Good. So it sounds like a great lineup, and we've got the domain now, thenewmediashow.com or newmediashow.com, one of the two, maybe both. And we're going to be setting up some email addresses directly on that next week here. This is really kind of the second week of our rebranding of the show officially. And so, Chris, we were doing a tech show in the morning, and Rob and I were just like all the time just kind of migrating and talking about YouTube and talking about the media space. And we made a decision a couple.
Isn't that what happened the last time I did this? We talked about YouTube and that video went up and I was right.
it's kind of weird how this thing has evolved. So we decided to make a change. And Rob, what did you had me pull up Chris's one? I guess this is Chris's new adventure, and I wasn't familiar with it till today. Chris, tell me about Vlogger Fair.
Vlogger Fair. Yeah. It's how do I explain it? Yeah, there you go. There's the website. So I don't know who your audience is right now.
It's everybody.
The core of it or the bulk of it. It's really actually, and I issued this challenge the last time and I didn't hear much in return, but you know, I am curious to know who your audience is. Over the past year, I've been doing a daily vlog, and that would be like just a daily slice of life. Like, you know, before we're doing this,
yep.
I was talking to, you know, my one of my cameras and telling my camera, you know, I'm about to do this little podcast thingy. And that will go into an overarching 10 minutes of video that's uploaded then to my YouTube channel. And it's a vlog, a daily vlog. I've been doing it for damn near a year. And when we started doing it about a year ago, even though it has no agenda, nothing to do with technology, it's just my life, bits and pieces of my life. The day we uploaded it, remember the last time we had this conversation, I schooled you in when it comes to engagement.
Right.
Engagement's still very, very important. And this is another reason why I'm curious. You know, if someone's out there watching this podcast or whatever, reach out to me. Let me know you're connecting. I mean, the value of doing it live is to be able to interact in the chat room too. So the people who are there, yeah, feel free to pipe up. The engagement that I got from vlogging or after doing it was just through the roof. I mean, the stats were just, they were so tangible. And you know, I continue to do it every day, and saw that my connection with community, you know, only widened and deepened from that point on. And there are a lot of people who do these vlogs or consider themselves vloggers. There are a couple of other YouTube events in the industry, rather large ones, really, but nothing that was really keen on helping people create content and actually creating the content at the event itself. So that's what Vlogger Fair is. It's basically for people who love to do vlogs, who are looking to collaborate with other people and to actually make it happen rather than just talking about, hey, we should do a collaboration. Like, we'll just do it now, you know, do it together. So we're bringing in some of YouTube's top bloggers, including iJustine, who just signed with UTA, Shay Carl, who's actually in the process of doing a vlogging documentary that was posted to Indiegogo and back to the tune of like $160,000, Charles Trippy, a rock star in his own right, Prank Versus Prank, or also known as Boyfriend Versus Girlfriend. These are huge YouTubers, like, you know, 1 million+ subscribers or so. So, you know, I'm small potatoes with less than 300,000 subscribers on YouTube. These are the big guns. However, it's not necessarily about the subscriber count. It's about the connection that you have with your community. Talked about this last time I was on here too. You know, your community connection, that organic community connection, is ultimately the thing that's going to spell, you know, your ongoing success or you just disappearing into nothing. And vlogging, you know, if you've got especially if you have a cult of personality about you, vlogging helps increase that engagement that you have with your community. And it did it in a way that I could not have predicted, but I knew that by putting a finer point on it, by doing an event, number one, I get to meet the top vloggers in real life. Mm-hmm. And number two, I get to encourage people who are trying to figure out vlogging to start vlogging. Now, here's what's interesting that came out of it. So the business model with vlogging is also very important for me. I haven't, you know, I can't do anything if I feel like it doesn't really fit to the core of what I want to do as a career, whatever the career happens to be. But I found out that, you know, I didn't even realize it, but I tried this tomato basil tea the other week. It got sent in some kind of care package and I tried it and I was blown away. I'm like, damn, dude, this is really, really good. So I said, I'm having some tomato basil tea. Didn't mention really who it was from, no brand or anything, but I ordered more and it came in these cartons of tomato basil tea. Not a paid endorsement or anything like that. And it turns out they reached out to me and they said, you know, can we send some of the tea to Vlogger Fair? You've actually gave us a pretty good bump in sales because that's what blogging does. It's just like a reality show. You see product, it's product placement, and brands need to be hip to it. The problem is no brands are hip to it. It's been like pulling teeth to get them to come along with YouTube. And unfortunately, I can only spend so much time either creating content, curating content, or managing the business side of things. The bigger play specifically with vlogging is, you know, continuing down the path of sharing that personal narrative, but also crossing it over with brand and product placement.
So I guess bring the question back to you from, is it going to pay the bills or is it at this point, is it something that you're just continuing to do on your own and no matter
it
what
can't.
The,
you know, if I continue down this path, it absolutely will. The bigger challenge is, you know, I'm not a salesperson and a content creator. I have to be both.
Right.
And that unfortunately makes me weak in both spots.
Yeah.
So I'm much happier in helping facilitate, you know, sales. In fact, you talk about Tim Street. He's helping. you know, doing some brand outreach. We've got some brands who are already aboard. Yelp, they were thrilled to do something like this because, you know, they're in their space. You know, videos. It's not just the next thing. It is the thing, right? YouTube is the discovery vehicle. We've got a couple of the brands that haven't quite fully signed yet, so I can't talk about them, but they're well on their way. Suffice it to say, the first year of doing any event is going to be the hardest. So getting attention out has been the biggest hurdle that we've had. But that being said, you know, we got the top YouTubers who are coming up here come, you know, hell or high water. It's happening. It's the question of how many people are actually going to know about it. And the price, of course, is extremely reasonable. $29 for, you know, general access, I think $99 for VIP, and I'm finding some software licenses to throw to VIPs. You know, I think vlogging is a huge opportunity, lying in wait for smarter sponsors. Unfortunately, it takes time to find those smarter sponsors, you know, and when I'm busy building a community, I don't always have the ability to, you know, close the loop with smarter brands. You know, I luck into it. You know, I get random projects that might happen. Just wrapped up something with Campbell's Soup Company. Did a stint with Reese's a couple years ago. About to start something with British Airways. And these are things that happen because, you know, you put your life out there. Interesting things happen. Capture it, document it, and brands want to attach themselves with that.
Go ahead, Rob.
So you're almost making like a reality show around yourself. So it's really kind of tapping into that personal brand thing, you know, that we see on Bravo and those kind of things and those big kind of Uber trends.
Sorry, can you repeat that? You kind of cut out there at the beginning.
Oh, I did. So it seems like, you know, this whole personal branding thing is a big part of what you're doing here. And can really anyone do this, do you think? Or do they need to establish some sort of a unique aspect to their kind of angle on what they're doing in order to build an audience?
Nah, it's not about audience. It's about community. And yes, anybody
Well,
can
sure.
Everybody's got a story. Everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. It's refining how you tell that story. It's connecting with people who appreciate the story that you're telling. And really the only rule to it is listen to your community, right? It's ultimately what's going to kind of keep you going forward.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I've done recently is my kids have, you know, they're starting to wanting to explore with the media space. And I bought some heroes and they've been having a lot of fun with them. Probably spent more money than I should have on them, but hey, that's the way it goes. And, you know, so my son's getting ready to put up his first couple of clips and, you know, we're working, trying to have him, you know, really kind of start out correctly. You know, what's your advice? I mean, you know, besides going and doing it,
that's always my advice. Just do it. You know, you're going to find out what you like. You're going to find out your workflow. You're going to figure that out. You know, ultimately with vlogging, it's being yourself and treating that camera as though it was another person.
Yeah.
Right.
And you don't connect to it as a physical object. You connect to it as an intimate object. You have to understand that when you put video out there, you are essentially in people's lives. And when you vlog, you're more than just entering someone's home. You're entering their heart. And you've got to treat that as a very special relationship. Yeah, it's very personal, very interpersonal.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, though, some people, you know, it takes a certain amount of charisma. You have as much charisma as anybody. And but I think that a lot of folks maybe don't have
it. Disagrees, by the way. You hear him barking. He's like, what? Dad has no charisma.
So, you know, that's a big part of it, though. You have to be appealing to the audience. If you're not, they're not going to watch, right?
You know what? People are attracted to different things for different reasons. That's all I can say. There is no formula for what is successful because everybody measures success differently.
You know, when there's 500 people hanging out in your chat room and you're not there, you know that you've got some engagement going on. And
I'm sitting in the dark, although I pulled the mic up on the live stream. I don't know if anybody realizes. In fact, I was talking to Rob. I've had that. I mean, there's still chat that's active on my live stream. I just haven't done much with it because I just don't have time. Like I ended up selling like a pretty good chunk of change the first year we did a live stream. I sold pretty well, but the problem is that I just couldn't keep up. You know, it was easy enough to sell the concept, but it became so hard to do the way that I knew it needed to happen. I can't scale my time. So while I'm fine with keeping the live stream up, it's usually the audio is muted 9 times out of 10. Or actually, let me go even further. 364 days out of the year, the audio feed is muted. Because I just can't, I just can't keep up because otherwise, you know, the chat room pulls me in and I'm honestly, it's not that I'm wasting time because I love doing it. The problem is I've got to do like 13 other things. And, we experimented with this last year. I launched a service for people that were trying to get my advice and, I get that all the time. People ask for advice all the time. I'm happy to give it, but if you're asking me for business intelligence, you're going to pay. Like, I'm not just going to hand it to you. Like, right. You know, here, yeah, my time is free. My time is not free. No one's time is free. I'm not a communist. So the sorry, my dog is just going.
It's okay. Don't worry. Background,
or dog in the background. Hey, Wiki, you want to join us?
So she's got something to say.
Yeah. He's like, God, I'm getting my own podcast. That's it. I'm done. Forget it.
Hey Chris, I think you found a new idea. A dog blogger.
I got a hold of a GoPro myself and put it around the one of the dog's necks, but it was just the video is so shaky. I couldn't use much of the footage. People got a kick out of it though. They said, oh, you should do it more often. I'm like, I'm not going to upload a video that is intentionally crappy. I don't care how the perspective is. I might try it again and see what comes of it. But anyway, I have geeks who come into the watch me at my home office and they've asked, well, could you have a radio stream going on? I'm like, well, then it's music that not everybody wants to listen to, but they want to tune in because they want to, you know, they're talking to, you know, technology or geeky, or they want to, you know, connect with one another. So what we did was we put a TeamSpeak server up over the video feed. And so people who are subscribed to the Nomies service could jump in. It just turned out that personality clashes and conversations that just were not just irrelevant, but just pointless. So I just turned it off. I'm like, I'd rather have a muted stream than something that's just mindless babble, which isn't mindless babble. Isn't always that bad. If it's interesting, mindless babble, when it's just absolute mindless smack talk, cause you're playing games with someone that no one else can see, it's pointless. So, it's still a possibility of me being able to, and I talked to Rob about this as well. Like, if I had talent, like, I've got enough community that's looking to be served by him. I just don't have I don't have enough bandwidth to do it. And certainly, you know, when it comes to, you know, where's the value in any kind of revenue potential. I mean, it's still there, but I just can't. It works, yeah. But it works differently than it used to. You know, YouTube's got a lion's share of my attention for a reason.
You know, when I first started this show, or actually my regular show that I did back in 2004, you know, I basically committed to two shows a week, and that has been sustainable for me. And I've known guys that were doing five shows a week, and some of those, and when I say shows, I'm, you know, they're putting an episode up every day. And those guys lasted about 4 years before they absolutely hit the wall. So I guess the question I have for you, you're vlogging every day. Yeah. So how much time, what is your allocation for that? Is it an hour, you know, or do you record?
To edit the video, yeah.
Do you record?
Record it all day.
You just record throughout the day?
Yeah, all day. I'm not intentionally interrupting you, Todd. I'm Italian. Not that that's an excuse.
No, it's okay.
I kind of know where you're going with it too. It takes time, but you know, anything worth building is going to take time. And that's something that, you know, you got to be mindful of, you know, how much is too much, how little is too little. You know, ultimately you want to leave people wanting more. You don't want to give them too much. And I've learned that too. Cause you're just oversaturating or nothing special.
Yeah.
Like I'll only go live on YouTube now when I'm unboxing a piece of hardware because I know that ultimately that live video is going to live on well past the time that it's live. Its shelf life is extended because I did it live and people are willing to watch it, possibly a longer video if it's got more content that they're interested in, specifically around a product. And so I experimented even this past week with doing a live review of the Surface Pro because it was just stressing me out. I'm like, I hate doing reviews. I hate doing reviews. Hate them. But the problem is that a lot of my core geek audience wants that. That's what they want.
Right.
And I can't – I've struggled with how to be able to give them what they want, more of me, more of what they want from me, while at the same time not killing myself. So I'm still looking for that winning formula of how to pull it off. And unboxing is not stressful at all. You unbox, you show it, like, ooh, look at this. Initial impressions, not stressful at all. A review is where it starts to get stressful for me.
Yeah, you really have to dive into the details of the product, so that would make it tough. Yeah, so,
Rob. But the way I try to do it, and I set the stage as much as I can. I'm like, you know what? You can read a spec sheet on any web page. I'm not going to go over this, that, and the other thing because you've already read it. You probably know it forwards and backwards. I'm going to tell you my experience with each one of these particular components of, and then that helps me get that kind of rubric, helps me get through, a review. Usually, like any kind of Android phone, I'll do this. You know, if a phone comes in, I'll do it because that's what the people, they're searching for phones more and more and more and more and more and more. Computers are dead. As far as like a lot of consumers are concerned, there's like, unless you've got a big brand around it, like Microsoft, that's the only time you're going to get velocity, or Apple. Like I'm guaranteed that if I do something around Apple, it's going to be a win. If I do something around Microsoft, it's going to be a win. If I do something around Google, it's going to be a win. Everything else, it's unless it's really unique, like the Oculus Rift, you know, it's a crapshoot. So why spend that much time on something that ultimately you're serving a good chunk of your audience, but only a fraction of them really care. And what happened with vlogging, I put it into the same YouTube channel because part of what makes our YouTube channel what it is because of me. And that's what, you know, people are drawn to, is that personality. So vlogging works within our channel. And some people have complained, like, I don't care about vlogs. You should put it in another channel. I'm like, well, here's the thing. The vlogs get better traction on a regular, consistent basis than half the tech stuff that I do. So if anything, I would put my technology content in another channel. I can't argue with the numbers. No one can argue with the numbers. I don't know what to tell you.
I noticed watching a couple of your videos that you've gotten very good at videoing yourself. What are you using? Are you using a pole with an iPhone?
It's just a super wide angle lens attached to a point and shoot camera. It's a modification that a company makes. They're actually going to be a vlogger for HD Hat. I'm sorry.
Show that up again.
It's just a point and shoot camera with a modified super wide angle lens, so I can just hold it right here and not have to worry too much about anything.
Right. You need to put have you done a piece on that? Because, you know, that...
Oh, yeah, I've done it before, and it doesn't matter. I'll put a link in every God-blessed description, and inevitably some idiot will ask. Sorry, not to call someone an idiot, but it's just like, my God, if it was a snake, it would have bit you.
Like, you know, but believe it or not...
I put it out there intentionally, because people ask these things
again
over
and again
over
and again.
And over again.
Because
but I don't blame you. I'm just saying that, yes, I have. I've said it before enough times that it gets to a point where I don't want to say it anymore because I realize the value for this company is greater than what I'm getting from the company, which is that fine line. But it also speaks to, you know, the value of sponsorship or deeper product placement and engagement. Unfortunately, not a lot of the companies out there are hip to that, or they don't see the value in it. Unfortunately, GoDaddy is one of those companies.
You know, the just recently when I was at NAB, the guy that got the most attention from people walking the floor was basically had a rig with a monopod. It basically had an iPad and it's called the Padcaster, and he did a Kickstarter to get it going. And you know, people were fascinated with this guy's rig, even the broadcast folks. And I kind of giggled because I said to him when I was up at his booth, I said, I bet you that, because all they do is they sell the rig. They don't sell the lens. They don't sell the accessories. And I said, I bet you your number one email that comes in is, what is your What is your setup? What should I buy to go along with this thing? And he says, yep. And he says, I have a tiny URL link. I know it by heart. And it's basically, he just types it in and hits reply. And he says, I probably do that 50 times a day. And I'm like, and I said, it's probably linked right in front of your website too. And he says, yep. But people will email before they.
Yep. Because you know why? You're Google. And that's fine because that's actually the future of search is going to be through social. It's not going to be through search engines. It's easier to ask someone a question than it is to ask a search engine. So people will. Yeah. They do and they will.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about this past week, you know, we're on this side of the fence where we're, you know, we're doing our own content, doing our own thing. We don't have these big newsrooms. What was your, you know, with everything going on in Boston this past week, how'd you think the mainstream media did? Do you think they completely lost their minds or did they?
I think they did fair, but I think they also starting to get cut out of the picture. I mean, I look at my own patterns. I look at other people's patterns. And granted, a lot of people will say, well, the time for punditry and saying the old media is dead is not the time during a crisis. I say, well, I think it is because, you know, I tuned into the scanner, directly using an app on my computer here that I've got in my hands, this pocket computer right here. Tuned into a scanner and listened, and I just kind of watched Twitter, watched hashtags and users. And I mean, the problem is you tune into media and it's just someone babbling on and on about, you know, some idiot sitting in the desk asking questions that can't be answered. Like, I was watching CNN or something I tuned into.
And, yeah, CNN was the worst this time.
They were babbling on there. They said, what was it? It was, he asked someone the question that the guy had finally been captured. He's in the hospital, a reporter standing in front of the hospital, the guy behind the desk at headquarters or whatever, guy with a British accent says, so do they know, you know, how long he's going to take to recover? Do they know? And he's asking questions. And I'm thinking, no one knows that. Like, it's like, it just happened. How could they possibly, where are you getting these questions from? It was just like, that's where the media is, right? You know, they're chasing the, they're chasing the ball and they're just filling time. And I don't think you have the same need to fill time with social media. You don't have to fill time. It just happens. And granted, there's a lot you have to filter out. I mean, listening to the police scanner, you know, you gotta filter out a lot and you gotta think, okay, what's relevant, what's not. But, you know, by listening to it, I was able to find out that the perp was captured before it was announced on CNN, minutes before I found out that way.
You know,
It also seemed like that the being really right and accurate was really valued more this time than I think we've seen in the past. And I thought that the NBC News folks were more accurate about what they were reporting than some of these other news agencies that were just flying ahead with speculation
All they're doing is they're reading Twitter anyway. So. Why tune in to someone who's reading Twitter? Just read Twitter, for Christ's sake.
One of the things that I did is, you know, I was being that we're 6 hours behind, and, you know, I got a text. I woke up in the morning and looked at my phone, and basically it said, have you heard the news? And I didn't load CNN or turn the TV on. The first thing I did was just load my Twitter stream and see what was trending. And, you know, and really within about 30 seconds, I kind of knew, and that was, you know, just rolling. As a matter of fact, I was still in bed. I wasn't even out of bed yet. And so for me, you know, there's this this new thing that's being talked about in the space about data journalism and these guys that are doing nothing but doing journalism from data streams like Twitter and on Google Plus and so forth. And, you know, you have to have some serious tools to do that. You know, some of the stuff that's out there, people are using like Hootsuite and some other things are okay, but they're really, to me, if I want to be able to aggregate and find content and stuff like that, it's more difficult. It's still a lot. And maybe I'm just old school, but for me, it's just a lot easier to be subscribed to my top 25 sites I want to look at. And I buzz through those in 5 minutes, I'm kind of caught up. I don't know. What's your process these days, Chris?
Social.
Just on social. So where are you hanging out then? Twitter, Google Plus, all of the above?
Sure. I mean, it's all the same to me. You know, YouTube, you know, for as much as I produce content, I do digest content, but it's usually when someone sends a link or, you know, I happen upon a link. it's rarely that I'm just surfing YouTube randomly, but YouTube is I mean, for video, YouTube is like number one. TV's absolutely a distant number two.
So are you using any specific programs or anything like that to help your process?
Not really. You know, I do a daily tech video thing, but it's not, I'm very aware that the stuff that I'm interested in, not everybody that I'm talking to is necessarily interested in, which is a bit depressing, but I'm very mindful of the bulk of the audience that reacts to the things they react to, why and how. And I tailor a lot of the content I do around the core of my community that way. So I'll watch for things that I think are more titillating for them than are for me.
Chris, do you have your own app now? And what other ways of distributing your content are you using nowadays? I know that you have a couple of podcast feeds. I mean, you have an audio and video podcast.
I've got one I think podcasts are dead. Quite honestly, I've zero bupkis for engagement. And unless you're like a This American Life or an Adam Carolla, what's the point? Like you're going after a community that is so infinitesimally small and maybe targeted, but it's just, it's irrelevant. Sorry, my dog just keeps.
That's okay.
Wiki. So sorry. Unfortunately, my wife is in Texas, so I can't have her button him up. I may actually disappear, go grab him, sit him down.
Now, one thing it's interesting,
really?
Because we see two trains of thoughts too. When we get podcasters on here and they talk about stuff, they're seeing, monumental growth. They're seeing their audiences, they're seeing engagement, and it goes back to the conversation that you and I had before that there are. Don't worry. He's going to go grab the dog. Hey, that was cool.
Yeah.
You notice I got a ray of light coming in here, Rob, where I have my shades.
That's been going on with you for a while now. You have that one little hole in your blinds
that feeds
you. Usually kind of hits you right in the forehead.
Well, we started an hour later, so the light is right there on my shoulder right now. So if I lean over into it, I'll have it straight in the face.
So Todd, continue. Bifurcation, podcasting.
It's the same thing. We're still seeing this this split. We're seeing the guys that are doing on YouTube are doing really well, and podcasters are doing real well. There's two camps, and it's And I don't think there's any answer for it anymore. I think it's just it's two different audiences. I really believe that.
I don't know. I think it's the same audience. Some people, podcasting is great for commuters, honestly, and it works for commuters.
Well, they think the majority of people, the average commute in the United States, 30 minutes. So
sure.
It's good. Yeah, it's pretty long.
All I do is basically. I think we're still using. Blip TV because it's easy and it's affordable for creating MP3s, but we distribute the podcast through audio and video there, but we bupkis for numbers, nothing.
Well, one of the challenges, and this is something you should look at too with Blip, is, and just as a word of caution, anything that's being fed from them on an RSS feed that's linked to them is throttled. So the experience from a video standpoint, if someone's trying to watch your show from that feed, they're going to be sorely disappointed. Now, if they're watching in the player itself, the player's fine.
But they're downloading and they're syncing it background stuff.
A lot of people are, it depends
clicking
on
clicking is play, right?
Yeah, clicking is play. So it depends on.
I don't see that happening. That's happening on YouTube.
I don't know about that. The stats
we
see.
I'm confident about that. I'd be shocked. Who's watching this video? Who's listening to this podcast?
Let's be really clear. I think it's happening in both places, and certainly it's happening a lot on YouTube for certain types of content,
right?
And I think it's happening a lot on the podcasting side for certain types of content. So I think that there is a break in audience and the demographic of the user. I think that the YouTube user tends to be quite a bit younger than the typical podcast user.
Yeah.
And I think,
my demographics are, they actually skew older, male, not younger. As much as the younger audience is very, they're very interactive. I've seen that our stats are either, it's kind of like this hump, you know, right in the middle. Males ages 33 to 40 seem to be a good chunk of the audience. Of course, by vlogging, I increased my female demographic massively.
Yeah, the 18 to 25, 26 crowd is definitely not a demographic that's consuming podcasts. I can tell you that. They're not there.
I just don't see anybody consuming podcasts anymore.
Well, I mean, you would be, I'm tracking 13,000 plus shows, plus some of the major networks that are doing podcasts. We're running their stats as well. And you would be shocked at the millions and millions of downloads that are happening across platforms.
Yeah, Libsyn just reported their quarterly traffic, and they're, from what I recall, I think it's doubled since last year.
Yeah, the numbers are way, way, way up. We're seeing double digit audience increases every quarter. So
well, then I guess I've been seeing shrinkage.
I think it's the audience, Chris. I really think it depends on who your audience is and where they are being told to consume the content.
No, I think people are going to find the content no matter where it is.
But also, Chris, it's where you're putting your energies too. You're putting most of your focus on creating community within YouTube, right? And that's where you're putting your focus, right? I mean, you have podcast feeds. I mean, I have them in the Zune catalog and I promote them. And I think that if you were able to promote both more equally, I think you would get more activity in the podcasting side.
If I had a reason to promote both more equally, I would. But right now, there's no reason to promote a podcast.
And what's the reason why you say that?
I just don't. Sales are not there.
It's tied back to the monetization.
Oh yeah, of course. It's always going to be about monetization. Right. I mean, you can do it for catharsis, sure, but it's far easier to do it on YouTube than it is to pursue your own audience. That's the problem. There are more people who don't know about you than who do know about you. So unless you have an amazing platform to jump off of, you're better off going with the culture of community. And unfortunately, that is not having your own podcast.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree. You know, in large,
you think more people know about you than don't know about you?
No. I'm saying from where I launched and from where my show's at, I know where my audience is. And I know they're not on YouTube. You know, when my podcast audience is 100,000 to one on YouTube, quite literally, that's, you know, where am I going to put my energies? Well, you know, if it's 100,000.
I never heard anything. Our last thing that we did, I never heard anything.
From you, you know, but the thing
from
is,
anybody.
So put your information out there and we'll see if people reach out after the show. This is, you got to understand, show is a different consume show. It's consumed by content creators who are largely creating media. So we'll see if they provide you feedback and I hope that they do.
Okay, here's their feedback. If they actually have a different story with their podcast, because I've seen it go slide nowhere but downhill in favor of, going to YouTube. Because, like, I'm just telling you, unless you've got an amazing platform to leap off of, you know, and you've got a traditional outlet or, you know, a big enough name, it just doesn't work.
Rob, what you think?
Well, I think that, I mean, I think playing the card of one against the other and one is so much better than the other, I think is maybe a little biased, Chris. I think that podcasting has its place in the media scope and people are seeing success with it. There's been lots of recent kind of coverage in the media and the press and the, you know, Forbes and other places that are talking to content producers out there that are finding success with it. I guess it depends on what
who.
But, you know, Chris, here's another thing, too. You know, we're running more advertising campaigns right now than we ever have. But the advertisers are being very specific on who they want in their advertising campaigns. And, you know, when I have, you know, 2,000-3,000 shows on advertising buys at any given time, running campaigns from a variety of different vendors, you know, Dyne just wrapped up a huge campaign that we ran with them. and they're evaluating the campaign and see if they're going to come back. And then, you know, we've had all of our other traditional advertisers been in the space for a long time. You know, and it's an interesting space. I couldn't survive on YouTube revenue. There's just no way. Even if I was doing the same volume I'm doing on my regular weekly show, it just wouldn't. I'd have to get another job, quite frankly. So I don't know. I think people are finding success in a variety of platforms. And the thing is, what I'm really focused on now for people is I don't want to pit podcasting against YouTube. I don't think that's even a discussion point anymore. What I'm trying to say is people are consuming on all glass. They're consuming wherever and whenever they find the content, whether it be through iTunes, whether it be through a podcast app, whether it be through someone's website, whether it be on Roku, Roku numbers are incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible, the growth on the Roku side. Google TV's a close second. Boxy, nowhere to be seen. It's non-existent. Samsung TV, we're seeing growth. So, you know, it all depends on where people want to consume the content. It's, I think, as long as they find it. I don't care how they find it, as long as they find it.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree with that. And what I'm saying is that there are more people who don't know who you are than do know who you are.
Oh, absolutely. That's sure.
So for that angle alone, the lion's share of attention. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a podcasting versus YouTube thing, but in terms of trends and a greater culture awareness, YouTube is just, the barrier to entry is far lower. The gains are far greater because what happens, when you talk about advertising, what it usually boils down to is an affiliate program.
But I think for this,
that's not advertising.
But I think
an affiliate program is not advertising.
I think for 99.999% of YouTube users, they'll never make a penny. For 99.99%, they'll never make a dollar. They may make a buck. But I will say this, that is not true in the podcasting space. You know, you have a much greater, and it may not be thousands of dollars. It may be take your wife out to dinner money, but most people are not even making take your wife out to dinner money on YouTube.
I guess the landscape, pardon me.
That's okay.
The landscape shifted, and I just don't see, maybe I'm thinking differently about how people are consuming podcasts, but they're typically consuming from the larger brands with higher production values and like the This American Lifes and, you know, those who've got NPR and, you know, they rule the roost, or
they don't.
Anybody who's got those larger brands that tied into it, they're absolutely doing well.
You'd be shocked. You'd be shocked at the numbers.
Because I what I've been doing for the past X years has been incorrect because I just don't see it.
Rob, where do you see growth on your side? I know what you're going to say, but where are you seeing
growth? Well, I see growth on the audio side, Chris, and I think that's the big difference between what we're talking about here is that you're talking about kind of snack food video in YouTube versus longer form audio content that is replacing radio. And I think that's where these lines don't cross.
True.
That's fair. I like that idea. I just don't know how to better encapsulate it. I mean, YouTube takes care of a lot of stuff, or if a sponsor lead comes in, I can facilitate a lot of the stuff. I mean, you talked about having an app. I've got 30,000 users on, you know, free app for both iOS and Android. I use Mobile Roadie as a platform. They basically have the tools or the plumbing upon which I can build this app. 80% opt-in push notifications, which is just astounding. Even for Mobile Roadie, they said, we've never seen a number like that before. And in there, you know, I've got, you know, the ability people can like listen. Where is it? I've got the podcast feed right here. There's a little podcast feed. Look at that.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Perillo, and this is your Geek Out for Friday, August 10th, 2012.
Something like
Geek
that.
Out
so
is brought to you once again
so people can listen to whatever, but people aren't listening to it.
So it's called.
And I've got 30,000 users, and the icon right freaking there. They're not listening to it.
It's Mobile Rodeo. Is that what you're using?
Mobile Rody.
Rody. Ah.
Rody.
Yeah, you can build your own app, distribute it, control as much of the experience as possible. But it was the easiest, best way for me to get an app done.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
The biggest value of having an app these days is for push notifications. Because so when we upload a new YouTube video, we'll send out a push.
Right.
When we send out when we do a YouTube live, we send out a push notification. Because then people are on their mobile, they're on their computer here, and then go, oh, I can listen. Boom. Yeah, if I knew the model, or if I had the model nailed, doing a longer form audio program, if I knew what it sounded like, it just takes. The question is who's listening?
It doesn't have to be a longer format audio show. It can be short, but I think 90-95% of the folks that are monetizing through at least the podcasting space are. Let's see if I can.
Well, Chris, let's go back in time a little bit. I mean, you used to do a live kind of audio show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I love doing live.
Yeah, yeah, and you were a very early podcaster too, and I know that's how we met, and that's how we kind of maintain our relationship is around kind of the whole podcasting space. And I see this ebb and flow around the podcast area now where I totally agree with you. Over the last maybe the last 3 or 4 years, the podcast kind of area has been a little plateaued and not much is going on. But what we're seeing happen like over the last 4 to 6 months is that things are starting to really turn around. And I think it has been driven by mobile phone usage of consuming this content.
I want to show you guys something. And this is, I've got permission to show this guy's stats because he's consented with me to do this, and I want to show you guys stats. This is a show that is basically it's a podcast based around a television program. It's called the Audacity to Podcast. And if you look at this guy's trending month to month from when he started his show, and this is going back from June of 2010 through now, March of 2013, you can see his growth. But if you look at the distribution standpoint, it's podcatchers, web browsers, mobile web browsers, tablets and pads, mobile applications, then anonymous, we really don't know what it is, TV set boxes. So that breaks down by the basically stuff like iTunes having 46%, the web browsers having 19%. The mobile web browsers having 14%, the tablets having 9.7%, and then believe it or not, the mobile application at 5.8%. So, you know, every show is a little different depending on what type of apps they have. But, you know, the main thing here is that people are still coming in and getting this content largely on iTunes, iPhone, iPad, but they're coming in with browsers too and in a pretty big swath. So if we look at, on the first part, iTunes was 37% of audiences, iPhone was 11, iPad was 9, and then Firefox was at 7. But I see some shows that have 7 and 5 for Chrome, and then IE is probably right there behind. So, you know, they have a pretty good, utilization still. So, you know, people are getting stuff on all the different devices. And if I go and bring up the full list, you know, it lists everything that's consuming his content. That's over 100. And in his particular list, he's got 80 different devices or clients that are consuming the content. And he's got an audience that, well, let's look at the map here. And he's got a pretty, you know, he's largely probably mostly American speaking, but it is largely in the United States, the majority of it. So, you know, I think, you know, from our perspective.
So is he doing video too, or is this just audio talk?
He does both. He does audio and video. Let me look at his episodes and see. A mix. Now, if you look at his split, the majority, high majority of his audience is on the audio side. A high majority. It's probably 20 to 1, you know, from a maybe 10 to 1 from a perspective. So, you know, this guy's got a pretty typical show. He's, you know, he's not a rock star, but he's not he's not a small show either. But he's a rock star in his specific category. Definitely, you know, he owns that particular category. So I think it also has a lot to do with, you know, what your category of content and who your audience is. So, you know, he's got a niche audience there.
Yeah. And also, is he using YouTube as an alternative distribution platform for him?
That I don't know. I'd have to ask him. You know, he's pretty heavy into this distribution type. I would imagine he's on YouTube. Let's go over and look and see if he's on YouTube. I can look it up real quick. But I think his is a typical story. He's been creating content now for 3 years, and he's built an audience slowly, just like anybody else would. And let me see here, the Audacity. And believe it or not, that's not even his biggest show. Yeah, he's on YouTube. So, let me look here. Okay, here's an example of a recent episode he put up on YouTube, and he's got 186 views.
Sure, because no one's looking for that information.
Well, they're looking for it. They're looking for it in different locations. So he's built an audience in a different platform. But YouTube is usually the place people go for tutorials. But you know, here he's got tutorials.
YouTube's a destination for a lot of types of.
It is.
It's true.
Clearly, but, yeah.
But here's a guy that's, you know.
Is this a longer form show? And I think you hit the nail on the head there.
14 minutes. 14 minutes is his mm-hmm. length. So again, it's one of those things where, you know, this guy's widely followed, and he's got a nice audience, and it's not the biggest audience, it's not the smallest, but you know, he's pretty typical, and he's making money, and he's a full-time content creator, and he doesn't get, obviously he's not doing full-time with 186 views on YouTube, so. But here he does audio and video. I don't know. I think it's for the most part. And again, going back to what I said earlier, I think it's all about, you know, I just want my content to be everywhere, and where my audience chooses to pick it.
I don't disagree. I just find that having my content everywhere, Todd, just seems that no one wants to experience it in a podcast form.
It's interesting because it's in Rob. We talk about this all the time. We see this again and again, don't we?
Yeah, and it's really, really baffling to us what's going on here. I don't know that we all have good research that can tell us what we're seeing here and what's going on here. I think this is the
there's two camps,
and how does this break out based on genre of content and personality? Right, I think Chris, you have a very unique personality that I think would do very well on YouTube. And I think you're smart for playing in that space and being there and exposing your personality and your way of creating content. I think it fits perfectly with the demographic of the user base of YouTube. But I also feel at the same time that you can find success in podcasting too. I think because podcasting thrives on that as well. I think good content will thrive in any distribution platform. It just depends on whether or not it's equally billed and promoted to the audience.
And I think too, is I don't think as a face personality, you know, I don't think I've got a face for YouTube, but you know, people don't listen to my show's not about about watching. It's about listening, and you're doing very visual things in your content. So it's about watching. It's not about listening. So if I want to see Chris Prillo, where am I going to go? I'm going to go to his website, or I'm going to go to his YouTube channel. I don't think I personally would subscribe to Chris Prillo on a podcast because I want to watch you. You don't want to watch me. You want to listen to me.
But I think it's, again, it comes back to not just the audience finding you. And I think there's going to be more going to find you elsewhere than in a podcast, but it speaks to the trend of short form versus long form. and yeah. having something that people want to listen to.
No, that's right.
I lose attention quickly. If I'm listening to something, even right. if I'm like, you know, I love This American Life. It's like number one for me. But sometimes I'm just like, I don't have the patience.
You know, and I don't know how people listen to me for an hour and 15 minutes either. But they do. And I'm like, okay.
How do you know they do? How do you know they listen all the way through? How do you know they're not just downloading it?
Because I do prompters throughout the show. I say, why don't you tell me what you think about this? Or why don't you tell me? And I get emails.
Really? And,
yeah, absolutely.
I didn't get a single email last time.
So, you know, so we got to ask people, what do you think about Chris's opinion? Do you guys have an opinion on what Chris is saying here on the division?
And we probably need to put out our email addresses in the show because I don't believe that we're actually doing that.
Yeah.
So mine's everywhere. You can find mine in the Twitter profile, and I mentioned
it's same with me too.
So look Chris Perillo up and give him a piece of your mind. Tell him
give me a piece of your mind. I'm happy to listen because
unload on him.
Convert me.
You know, and I think too is in the engagement thing is highly important. And I think what I've seen too from an engagement standpoint. And you know, a lot of times when advertisers come to me, they say, "Okay, I want your biggest shows." And I have to gently, kindly tell them, no, you're going to take a mix of shows. And the reason for it is oftentimes I'll find a small show that has 2,000 or 3,000, maybe 4,000 listeners that on a per episode basis that are going to be heavily, heavily, heavily engaged. And they're going to have this huge response to whatever the call to action is. And then I have shows that have a audience size of 50,000 or per 100,000 per episode, and they muster almost equally the same type of engagement that the small show does. So sometimes, believe it or not, I like to have campaigns where it's nothing but smaller shows, and we end up getting higher engagement rates because the audiences are more niche. Yeah. They're more.
That's what I'm saying. I agree, Todd. It's that level of engagement. Yeah. I mean, we'll go back to the one that we did last time. It was this engagement, 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 engagement.
But what pays,
in line with you. It's more important to have those people.
But what pays the bills is volume. And if you have an engaging audience that has volume, you're going to do fantastic no matter what space you're in.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Unless you have that volume initially, sponsors aren't interested.
That's where we've come in, and that's where we found our niche is basically saying, hey, you don't have to worry. We will build the volume package for you. And
now you have my interest because I do engagements based on sponsorship models.
Right.
That's what I do, right? If I know that there's, you know, if someone came to me and said, you know, we want to do X, I'm like, okay, well, it'll cost you Y. And we figure it out. It's simple math. The problem is that unless you have that connection there, I'm not going to, you know, the question is how much content do you create to predict having numbers that are going to be impressive to get to the numbers that you're looking for to match the expectations of the particular sponsor. And that's where, you know, you get locked into this, well, we'll pay you for every lead. No, F you won't. Like the problem is that you're latching and you're asking for free advertising at that point, and that's not something that some of us are willing to give.
What we're finding and what is the case is an advertiser can go to YouTube and they can buy YouTube at $6 all day long. They can buy a remnant inventory for pennies per thousand. I mean, it's really ridiculous how low it is. So, you know,
that's why I find sponsors, Todd.
So then if you find when a sponsor comes in, then they're used to, especially the digital folks, you know, they're used to paying so much. So it's a whole, you know, it's the same thing that's been going on for years. It's a whole training purpose, and you have to justify the higher CPMs that we charge. And our CPMs are not ridiculous. Our CPMs are what I feel are realistic and what I hope will generate good ROI for the advertisers so that they'll come back. I can charge them a huge amount of money for a quarter and burn their cash for a quarter. But if we don't generate ROI, it's going to be a one-time deal. And, you know, ultimately the way the advertiser looks at it is it says, okay, I know that on print TV if I'm running banner ads, it costs me X number of dollars to get a new customer. And that's what they're really, most of them are looking at. How much did it cost me to get that new customer? And am I, you know, if I'm selling a product that's a one-time deal at $14.95, it better cost, you know, a lot less than $14.95 to get that customer. So that's where a lot of companies have trouble in the digital space, unless you're a company that has a reoccurring base fee. In other words, you're going to get charged for a product every month or every year. It's something that once you're there, you don't leave, and they can justify that higher initial payout. You know, oftentimes what I'll find is that we price ourselves right out of the market because they're used to getting a certain level of return on their dollar. And if we don't deliver higher than that, they're not going to advertise a space. Unfortunately, there have been some folks that come in, have promised the moon and really did not deliver. And what will end up happening then is that the advertiser will say, well, this space doesn't work. Right. And I think
we have, familiar with that,
but yeah. I think we have to be careful with the, I think as content creators, we have to really understand how much are we really, really worth. If we're building a brand, that's a whole different story than selling a product. Building a brand is about us endorsing a brand and building something and talking about it that have a lifetime of value for that customer. But if you're...
Let's see, what you can do though with that, you know, in terms of figuring out your value is you figure out what people have paid before and if they were happy, and you go from there.
It's true.
There's your metric, right? You know, and like, so if you don't make that mark, fine. The value of being omnipresent is the fact that I can have 13 things that I could throw at a potential sponsor.
But I think too, though, is that what we have to realize is that, you know, sponsors are actually media buyers are used to working in a very, how should I say it, structured world for years. Mm-hmm. They've bought banners. They just, you know, they basically fill out a form and they put their buy in. They're done. They've worked in these. Very linear type of advertising buys that don't require a lot of creative thinking. And even though media buyers are supposedly creative types, largely they're not.
They're data driven.
They're data driven. Yeah.
So, I mean, all those guys are. They're about click throughs.
And that's the problem, right?
You know, it's a problem.
I can't tell you how many times someone says, Chris, I bought a Mac because of you. You know how much money I made from that?
You know, and we understand, you know, I understand that as well as you do. But here's, and the thing is, though, for in the world that we live today, you know, we have to work within the constraints of the system or hopefully find companies that are starting to figure out that, you know, building brands and engagement and awareness is important. But most companies are old school. They're very tight with their dollars. And guess what? They don't like to risk money on.
New things.
I don't blame them. That's the thing. I don't blame them. I mean, I can only promise to deliver with the things that I say that I'm going to do. I'm going to be able to do.
Right.
Sure.
I can't promise downloads. What I can show you is here's the trends. Here's what I'm going to do to make it work.
Yeah.
And that's as much as I can do.
Now, the guys in the chat room saying my mic is overmodulating. I don't know what's going on.
They said that about an hour ago, dude.
Yeah, and I turned it down. So
speaking of, you said an hour and 15 minutes, so we got about 5 minutes.
Yeah, we do. So, Rob, as we're coming to a close here,
Yeah, Chris, I just wanted to talk about the whole monetization of the vlogging that you're doing. It seems to me, the more I think about it and the more I watch your show, that product placement might maybe an opportunity for you and more.
Absolutely. I've sold so many geeky hoodies and apparently tomato basil teas. I'm not making any money from it directly, but that's the case.
Yeah. So that's something
I cover up my car logo because I'm like, why am I going to give them free advertising? I do. I don't.
It makes sense.
I think it's a way that the podcasters can monetize too. I think really popular shows could do that as well. Yeah,
but
nothing
new. Come on.
No, it's not. But it's not done very very often. I mean, people just aren't doing it. I know
no one's selling it.
I mean, I think most of the monetization that's going on right now is around pre-roll. and
sad.
You know,
it's horrible.
The overlay stuff, and we need to move beyond that. I mean, I think that the in-content stuff is much more effective. You know, I know we've talked about this stuff, and we need to continue talking about it, but the in-content advertising is much more effective than the pre-roll and the overlays and all this crap.
Tell you what, you find me sponsors, I will create content.
I think
that's the bottom line.
I think they want to, you know, I think most sponsors are looking for something that's creative and good. But, you know, the challenge is then, are they willing to, you know, walk up to the table with the right amount of cash?
Well, when someone's got enough mobile users using an application that could be leveraged, enough Twitter followers, enough Facebook likes, enough Google Plus circlers, enough YouTube subscribers, like, it's a smorgasbord. Chris, it's not just one island in the stream. It's an archipelago.
Chris, what you need to do, and what will help you, and what we found with other clients of ours, is that if you take a, you know, take a client that you've had recently, and then, you know, go to them and say, what were your results? Can you give me a testimony, or can you tell me how we performed?
Done.
And use that in your media kit.
It's already done. Way ahead of you.
So if you have that, you should, you know, once that is a, you know, you have that nice media kit, you should not have any problem whatsoever attracting folks to spend money, especially,
but
you know.
But that's the problem, is it's finding the people that have to spend money and showing them the opportunities once they have money to spend. That, honest, like I'll go back to saying, you know, I'm not a salesperson full time.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't push. So I gotta look for those opportunities as they avail themselves. That's, like I said, find a sponsor. I will create the content. I will figure out how to make it work.
Well,
always do. Always have. Always will.
Send me your latest media kit so I have it on file for sure.
Go.tagjag.com/sponsor.
Okay, say that again.
Send it to you. I've been doing it so long, and it probably sucks. But you know what? It's converted well enough, and I know I could probably do a better job. I'll send you the link. It's just a Google Doc, basically.
Oh, that's fine.
That lists a few of the options as I've laid it out in the past. Or just starting points for conversations to tell people, like, you know, this ain't no Mickey Mouse operation. Well, actually, I wish it was a Mickey Mouse operation, because then I'd be able to demand higher rates.
Rob, any thoughts as we move forward here?
Well, Chris, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk kind of finally about your Vlogger Fair. It's what, $29? To attend,
yeah,
right? Is that
it's
right?
It's probably going to be, it's keyed in June 8th and 9th, Seattle. I mean, it's probably more for the people who live in the Seattle area. I mean, because you have to travel. But here's the thing: we're bringing in top YouTubers. YouTube is one of our primary sponsors. You know, it's happening, and it's going to be a great place to do collaborative work with these bigger vloggers to possibly get more attention for your YouTube vlog. That's kind of the bottom line.
I'm looking at your track here. Looks like it's going to be fun. And
not a conference, though. You got to ignore that. In fact, maybe taking that bottom part down. It's not a conference. It's a fair. And that track, those tracks make it look like it's a conference.
Okay. So what's the difference between a fair and a conference?
You tell me.
I guess you're just having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Versus going to a conference, going into these speeches or listening to these panels that just people prattle on and on, which I guess is podcasting. What we just did. People you just don't care about. Like, why did I listen to that? Why did I waste 45 minutes of my life? You'd rather be spending time in the hallway with, you know, having fun with meeting people, having conversations. And so it's a fair.
No, that's where business gets done at all conferences, in the hallway anyway.
That's right. So let's cut out the chaff and go straight for the wheat.
So it's basically a social networking event in the real world, right?
Yes, pretty much. It's fair.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Good. Well, Chris, I'm going to keep
thanks.
Yeah, right to we're a little just under an hour and 15 minutes, but thanks for coming out today.
Oh, sure. Not a problem.
And everyone check Chris Pirillo out on YouTube or just Google him. You'll find him. He's right there at the top of the search results. If you've got comments about this show today, we'll have a new email address for you next week, but you can send them to either Rob or myself. You can send them at rob@robgreenlee.com or geeknews@gmail.com. And definitely.
And he does have a podcast. It's called the Locker Gnome Daily News?
Yeah, Locker Gnome Daily Reporter, TLDR.
That's right. Yep.
And, too long, didn't read.
It's an audio and video podcast, and it's really good. So check it out.
Yeah, and definitely send Chris some comments on today's content. If nothing else, I listened to you, loved it, hated it, whatever, and I'm sure he'll appreciate the
I love the haters. I just hate them.
That's, you know, the haters are always the best. That's
those just, are the people, you know, you want them to either love you or hate you. So I do not mind either way. When someone hates hates me, I've struck a nerve.
Yeah, exactly. They're definitely passionate if they hate you, right?
And they're definitely going to listen because, you know, it seems like the haters are always the ones that listen or there to criticize. I do have to ask you one last question, Chris. Have you played Ingress?
No, you know, I looked at it, but I'm like, eh.
Haven't got sucked in, huh?
I haven't played it. Yeah. I don't care to play it. Sorry.
I'm not a gamer. I'm a casual gamer. Well, I'm a gamer that way, but I'm a casual gamer. I'm definitely not. I'm not someone who cares to spend. I'll pick it up, put it down. You know, I don't want to get sucked into anything. I'm having too much fun doing other things.
I find it's pretty fun for a parent that's got kids and you guys want to get out and explore and see cool things. It's that. Is what I'm using it for, is my kids and I are going hiking and going to different places and seeing things. And I think that was the whole purpose of it with, you know, even.
Yeah, but you're using a Nexus 7?
I'm an iOS guy, so I bought a Nexus 7 just to play the game. So.
Oh, right, because it's Android. Yeah,
it's Android only.
You should have gone with the Nexus 4. The Nexus 4 is an amazing Android device, one of the best out there, if not the best right now.
Yeah, so this is, you know, I just picked this up on a whim, and believe it or not, it's not bad. It's not a bad device for $199. It's better than the Kindle device by far, but in my opinion. Again, it's another opinion.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't take much.
All right, guys, thanks so much.
Sorry, now I'm saying your opinion takes a lot. I'm just saying that it doesn't take much to beat the Kindle at this point.
Right. Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm still pretty much an iOS guy, but it is Android.
You know, you got to check out. Sorry, I'm going
to. Sure, go ahead.
You're going to hate me. We went over last time, and I do have to get scooting because I've got a puppy sitter coming over to coordinate. There's an app that launched yesterday called Osito, Osito, which is basically like a Google Now clone for iOS. Until Google Now is released for iOS, Osito. It's free. It's clean. And it'll...